países donde ahora los están hasta asesinando por escuadrones de la muerte que están existiendo en Centroamérica y ahora en México. So, necesitamos luchar para nuestra gente, necesitamos echar para nuestra juventud, porque así es la única manera que vamos a tener a nuestros hijos, tener una esperanza de que quizás un día ellos van a ser el presidente latino en este país. Y por eso tenemos que luchar, para que sea una persona que llegue allí con esas éticas de nuestra gente, nuestras comunidades, y no lavado de cerebro en las universidades donde le meten pura basura. Tenemos que educar a nuestra juventud a lo que tienen que hacer y las responsabilidades cívicas que tienen que estar involucrados. So, por eso estamos aquí. Nuestra lucha ha logrado que uno de nuestros compañeros que estuvimos luchando, Luis Enrique Guzmán, que tienen aquí al lado mío, ese luchó por más de 2 años en una detención en San Pedro, organizó unas huelgas de hambre allí y lo mandaron a diferentes estados como castigo. Pero después de 2 años y ayuda de gente como ustedes, gente de afuera de la comunidad, él pudo lograr su libertad y ganar withholding of deportation, que es similar a asilo político. So, Luis Enrique, mucho gusto de tenerte aquí, compañero.
Yo traigo un mensaje para el señor Obama, que se olvide de Guantánamo y que se empiece a recordar de que tenemos miles y miles de compañeros y compañeras que están en los centros de detención, no solo aquí en el sur de California, sino a todo alrededor de los Estados Unidos, sufriendo de la represión que el Departamento de Seguridad Nacional está criando en contra de nuestra gente. Nosotros le pedimos al señor Obama esta noche que él haga una reforma dentro de los derechos humanos para toda la gente que está ahí. Yo estoy representando a todos los compañeros y compañeras que yo dejé en los centros de detención. Yo fui víctima de la represión que se vive dentro de esos centros de detención. Yo estuve organizando a los compañeros y compañeras allá adentro. ¿Y qué fue lo que yo recibí del Departamento de Seguridad Nacional? Fue una golpiza que ellos nunca quisieron reconocer que me la habían dado. Así es de que esta noche también yo le quiero decir a toda la comunidad inmigrante que está escuchando este mensaje, que pierda el miedo y venga a soportar estas marchas, porque necesitamos el apoyo de ellos. Necesitamos que se escuche su voz para que nosotros podamos obtener la victoria. ¡Gracias! ¡Y sí se puede!
Tenemos a una persona más, una compañera, Lupe.
Me da gusto de que todos estén aquí reunidos y necesitamos juntar más gente, juntar más familiares, amigos.
Together, I have a situation that I want to share with you all.
Yo me iba a casar. Y se llevaron a mi novio, y porque no era americano, no pude pagar la fianza. Yo tenía dinero para sacarlo, pero mi dinero no valía porque él no era americano. Y me quedé con mi boda, pero él no estaba. Mi boda se hizo un funeral, y fue el día más feo de mi vida. Ahorita todavía lo tienen detenido. Y no ha salido, lo tienen en Miraloma, y es bien triste de saber de que a un humano lo tienen como un animal, lo tienen encerrado. Este ICE está separando a familias, está separando a hijos de padres y madres, y es muy injusto. Y estoy aquí para representarlo a él, que él no puede hablar, pero nosotros sí tenemos voz.
Acaban de escuchar algunas de las voces de los cientos de manifestantes que se congregaron este miércoles frente al edificio federal de Los Ángeles para exigir un alto a las redadas contra los migrantes en Estados Unidos. El edificio federal es uno de los centros de detención de la Policía de Inmigración y Aduanas, una agencia federal que trabaja bajo la jurisdicción del Departamento de Seguridad Interna. También queremos informarles que este viernes presentaremos un reporte sobre el caso del prisionero político indígena Leonard Peltier, quien, según aseguran sus familiares, fue atacado recientemente en la cárcel donde se encuentra. También hablaremos sobre otras vejaciones que padecen los pueblos originarios en Norteamérica. hemos llegado al final de otra edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro agradecimiento a todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Rolando Solano y del director del proyecto, Fernando Velázquez, se despide Norma Martínez. Gracias por su atención.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPad o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Michael Parenti is coming to Santa Cruz on Wednesday, February 4th. Michael Parenti, noted scholar and political analyst, will be speaking at the Loudon Nelson Center in a benefit for Free Radio Santa Cruz at 7 p.m. Once again, the date, Wednesday, February 4th. Admission at the door for just the talk is a $10 to $25 sliding scale donation. And prior to his talk, there is a chance to have dinner with Michael Parenti and receive a copy of his latest book. Hopefully tickets will be available soon at the Capitola Book Cafe for this special dinner, which includes reserved seating tickets. Cost will be $80 for one or $140 for a couple. You get one book. So once again, Michael Parenti coming to the Loudon Nelson Center Wednesday, February 4th at 7 o'clock.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah, friends, I forgot.
And welcome to Free Radio Santa Cruz's Bathroom Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norris. We'll give you a little bit of theme music, or actually little-known theme music from my old favorite Young Frankenstein, Mel Brooks, little-known, and I think recently crashed musical on Broadway, and then we'll get to the show. We have two call-in guests expected. One is from Fresno, California, Michael Rhodes, who's a longtime activist and articulate writer and successful prosecutor of a lawsuit that won the homeless of Fresno $2.3 million and secured some civil rights for them. Secondly, we're going to have a call from rabble-rouser Mike, another Mike, from St. Louis. That'll be around 7. He'll be talking about the homeless scene there, as well as liberals versus radicals. That's going to be happening in about an hour. Stay tuned. You're listening to 101.1 FM.
Now you're a creature, a primitive soul. You don't know your left from your right. You're lost in the dark. You need a spark to lead you into the light. I'll be that guide. I'll be by your side. I'll pull you out of the mire. You'll be the greatest creation of man since the invention of fire. You will walk. You will talk. Everybody will gawk at the man about town. From the start, you'll be smart. You will break every heart. You're the man about town. And I know when you open that door, you'll be cheered, never feared evermore. Raise your eyes to the sky. There's no holding you down. You won't be a flash in the pan. You're the man, you're the man about town. Though you feel like a beast in a cage, stick with me and you'll be on the stage. Throw your hat in the ring, they might make you a king, and you'll trade that hat for a crown.
And that's from Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein. That's Dr. Frankenstein talking to his beloved creature. As mentioned before, you are tuned to 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, And we have 2 hours, actually about an hour and 50 minutes left in the show. If at any time you choose to interrupt the smooth progress of my prefabricated show with a abusive phone call, the number to call is 427-3772, or possibly a non-abusive phone call. That would be even more interesting. Again, the same number, 427-3772. If you wish to harangue off-air or have any questions or some information you want to pass on, there is an off-air number for me and also for the organization I work for, HUFF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, and that number is 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, or 423-4833. If you want to give some bucks to the station, or you want to donate some equipment or some, give them your hard-won advice, or possibly, I don't know, become a member of the station yourself and get a program, go online to freakradio.org and download an application or pass on a message, or you can call the voicemail at 427-4523. And if anybody wants to run and get a pencil, in case you happen to be sitting down or in a stationary location where you actually have a pencil or have a radio to listen to this or a computer that you're listening to it on, I'll give you a moment to do that so you can, again, write down these numbers in case you want to use them. And you can always get the basic number by, or any of the numbers, by calling the basic number, my number, which is 423-HUFF. Pretty easy to remember, 423-HUFF. Again, the call-in number on air is 427-3772 or 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, that's us. And the call-in, the number for the voicemail for the station, in case you wish to leave a PSA or a question for the rest of the collective, or you have a question about another show other than mine, it's 427-4523. And that's a lot of numbers. Hopefully somebody got, a few of you got some of them, and maybe you'll remember, and maybe you'll choose to call in, because that's what makes the show lively and interesting. 427-3772 is the call-in number. So I'm going to be talking about a couple things. I kind of would like to prepare us for the initial call I'm hoping to get from activist Mike Rhodes, whose writing you can see online at indybay.org, indybay.org, indybay.org/Central Valley, because that's where he is at. He's in Fresno, which is where he'll be calling us from tonight if he makes it and calls in. And he's been doing some successful work there, dogging the homeless czar of Fresno, dogging the new mayor, dogging the national homeless czar, Joseph Mangano, and more important than that, facilitating the slice-up of a couple million bucks for homeless people for housing that they didn't have before, one as a penalty settlement from the city for the kinds of things Santa Cruz does to its homeless, stealing their property, throwing it away, unlawfully arresting them. It's mainly about property seizures, but it's interesting that in spite of this lawsuit, Chief Ranger John Wallace here in Santa Cruz at the Parks and Recs Department gets fatly and richly funded by Mayor Matthews and other of his vocal supporters on the city council, even as they babble about the need for budget cuts and wring their hands and denounce the SEI union for not coming to the table and taking cutbacks so the city can continue to provide services, by the which they mean, of course, rangers roaming the Poganip, harassing homeless people, over-policing downtown on Pacific Avenue. And I think, I've got my pet gripes, but certainly paying for a lawsuit is going to be another one of them once people get together the wherewithal and the attorney interest and the documentary evidence to do in Santa Cruz what was done in Fresno, because the procedures are pretty much the same. Ranger Wallace goes up, tags camps, then calls in Labor Ready, and they come up and they destroy the camps. They shred the tents. They dumpsterize all the homeless property, and they toss it all away. And this is done along the levee, and it's also done along the beaches, and it's done without any respect for the fact that some people have no choice but to live outside. And in Fresno, this has been successfully fought, and the city is paying a significant price for it. And a number of organizations have come together to support homeless people, and one of them is called the Fresno Homeless Advocates, whose emails I get regularly. They're dealing with a number of things, which I'm hoping that Mike Rhodes, when he calls in, will be talking about. Homeless have formed their own tent cities in Fresno, their own encampments. One's called New Jack City. And one of their main opponents now is the Caltran, I believe it is, or maybe it's called Union, maybe it's Union Pacific there, the corporation that is, you know, that has the railroads, is trying to arrest people for being on their property, even though it's not property the railroad is using. It's not property that it's dangerous to be on. It's just property they've decided that they're going to declare that they own, because they own it. No one else, however, and however difficult a life threatening situation they're in through being outside in the winter in Fresno, not the most comfortable situation. Union Pacific has decided to enforce practices that apparently Fresno, the city of Fresno, is not enforcing anymore because they've been sued in federal court. I guess Union Pacific feels it can get away with it, or maybe it's doing something slightly different because it's privately owned, whereas the city's property is publicly owned. We'll be hopefully hearing more about that. Other things that have been happening, we had a cop watch yesterday, actually day before yesterday, downtown Tuesday, and we'll be having another one next Tuesday. This was the cop watch in front of Borders, where we set up a table, had some petitions encouraging people to press the relevant authorities to investigate, fire, and arrest bad cops who are engaging in repeated habitual violations of the civil rights of local citizens. And also, we, of course, were urging that the public assembly be restored in parking lots, as every Wednesday, as yesterday, it was restored by the drum circle at next to the farmer's market, where the city came and put up its little green mesh fences, trying to make sure that, or to discourage drummers from using areas otherwise open to the public. But that the mysterious powers that be have decided should not be open to the public. And, of course, what the drummers and their supporters do is they simply take down the green mesh fence, wrap it up, toss it off to the side, and proceed to use the area as it was traditionally and customarily used for the last decade, as drumming, as a place where people serve and eat food and so forth. And that went on in spite of the kind of on-again, off-again weather on Wednesday. Showery. Apparently people didn't mind braving the weather for some community and for some music and for some chow down together, and that was good. The day before, as I mentioned, the cop watch, we ourselves had a kind of a chow down. We had some soup from Joe Schultz. It was such a hot day, though. Boy, strangest weather we've been having. Then it came so late that a lot of people, we really didn't use as much of the soup that as we'd hoped. Really tasty soup from a Jumbo Gumbo Joe Schultz. And thanks Joe, for bringing that soup. There was also a lot of abomination going on the streets. That was, of course, January 20th. I hear bells. The inauguration day, or coronation day. I think I better answer this call before I go deaf. Let's see what we got here. That's a little better. Let's see who's on the line. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, it's Mike in Fresno.
Hey, Mike Rhodes. I've been talking about you and your antics with the homeless czar and the mayor and the local czar and Union Pacific. It's just, you know, you're kind of like a more fun than a barrel of monkeys.
So do you have a homelessness czar in Santa Cruz?
Well, actually, we have an executive director of the Homeless Service Center, which is, his name is Ken Cole, and he's resigning to move up to another position, which I think is the housing authority. I kind of like Ken Cole, and I don't like Ken Cole, so I don't want to call him a poverty pimp, but he does make a salary off of tending and minding the poor people, so maybe he is a poverty pimp. But no, we don't really have a homeless czar here in the sense that there's some person who's the city has appointed to take money from the feds or from the state and channel it supposedly into homeless resources. But you do have a czar, don't you?
He just started last week, and it was sort of long awaited. They were planning on hiring somebody about a year ago, and it just got postponed and postponed, like so many things that relate to the homeless here in Fresno, is that there always seems to be some reason to wait for something better to happen. And we've really never gotten the better. It's just a lot of waiting so far.
Well, I know that Fresno is what? It's are you half a million people? How big are you anyway?
We're real close to 500,000 in the city of Fresno, probably 480,000 or something right now. And in the county, there's about 1 million people in Fresno County.
So we're not really, you know, czar-sized city here. We're 55,000, something like that, in Santa Cruz, maybe 250,000 in the county. So
maybe you could have a homeless prince.
Homeless, right. Maybe a homeless pretender or something. I don't know. But,
well, I find it interesting that, you know, they've hired somebody to focus on the homeless issue in Fresno. And his goal, I mean, I talked to him for an hour yesterday, and what he told me is that in 6 weeks he wants to have vouchers for every homeless person in Fresno to get into apartments or hotels so that they would just be able to get off the street for the asking. There would be no restrictions, no limitations on it, and that it would be open and available to everybody. Now, if he can do that, I will, you know, send him over to Santa Cruz next and have him clear up the issues there.
Did he show you his budget and get specific about his time frames and so forth?
I think he's still in the process of working this out. I mean, the guy's been on the job for less than 2 weeks now, and he is working on the details of the housing voucher program. With coming after that, they're going to be converting downtown buildings that are vacant into usable habitat for homeless people. And then in the long run, 2-3 years down the road, their plans are, and this is, they're not going to just start it 2 years down the road, but the idea is to start now, and it'll take about 2 years for this to unroll, will be building enough facilities, a lot of these new, some of them be rehabs and buildings downtown, but he really stressed that he wants to have some geographic diversity in where homeless people are living so that everybody isn't bunched up in one big building downtown where there's, you know, 10,000 homeless people living in.
Now, this is, who is this man? What's his name?
Greg Barfield.
And what's his background?
Well, I know him as Cynthia Sterling, Councilwoman Cynthia Sterling's assistant. Cynthia Sterling is a city council member. She represents West Fresno, where most of the homeless, well, all of the significant homeless encampments reside in her district. And so Greg was the point person in her office dealing with this issue, and I talked with him a lot over the last couple of years.
And what has he done for homeless people as a point person in her office over the last 2 years?
Well, I guess you're looking for something positive.
Or negative.
Or negative.
I mean, you know, whatever. That would be even more telling.
Yeah. Well, okay. For example, there was running water at a homeless encampment called The Hill. Somehow, for some reason, it got shut off. We went to him and said, hey, Greg, you know, what's up with this? And he immediately fixed the problem, and the water went back on. So there was some, you know, technical issue, mechanical issue with the water system, and he got it going again.
Okay,
now,
that's
on the
good.
Other hand, he's been very unable to provide any significant services like trash pickup, portable toilets to other homeless encampments. There's one homeless encampment that has a couple of those things, but it's totally inadequate, and we've been pushing them for years to do that, And in his position as the assistant of a city council member, he didn't have enough power to get that done.
And no. Has he, in his new position, now provided those services to the encampments?
No, and I don't think he's going to either. But what he did in his first day as the homeless czar in Fresno is he was able to stop a cleanup, what they call cleanup in put it in quotes, of homeless encampments in on Santa Clara and on G Street in downtown Fresno. They had posted it that they were going to go in and clean up and take people's property if it was left behind, forcing them to move. I complained to him about that. He agreed that that was inappropriate and that this is a new administration with a new policy, and they're not about pushing people out of the encampments when they don't have a better place to go.
Now, this is you have a new mayor. Previously, it was Mayor Autry, and now it's Mayor...
Swearingen.
Swearington?
Swearingen.
Swearingen. Now, this is a woman?
Yes, Ashley.
And Ashley has been inviting you out to tea and so forth?
Well, not exactly. I don't know that Ashley and I are going to be good friends, but
is the czar accountable to Ashley or accountable to somebody else?
Well, he reports to the city manager's office, and then the city manager's office, of course, is reports to Ashley Swearingen, the mayor.
You have a strong mayor system. Is the mayor stronger than the city manager? Or?
Oh yeah. We have a strong mayor system here.
We have the opposite here, as you may know. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't have much of a comment about that. It depends on the mayor. You know, if you've got a progressive mayor and they've got a lot of power, that's good. But if you have, like we have had, 15 years of back-to-back Republican administration, you're just sort of reeling in the pain.
And Ashley is a conservative Republican, or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you say that she's better than the previous Mayor Autry, who you had numerous disagreements with, and who fought the federal attempt to provide, the federal court case under Judge
Wanger. Well, look, I mean, it's the difference between Attila the Hun and, some other...
Louis the 16th?
Yeah, perhaps. I would say she's a little brighter than he is and a little, she's a little sharper. For what it's worth, she said that she is committed to ending homelessness, getting homeless people off the street.
That's isn't that the national blather, the national buzz, the national chatter that we've gotten about the 10-year plan to end homelessness under Bush?
Well, hey, let's see what happens. I mean, I am as cynical about it as you are, Robert.
No, I'm just trying to see. I'm just trying to clarify. That is the same rhetoric as the previous.
Oh yeah, well, yeah. Phil Mangano, who's the national homeless czar, was down here last week, and he just says sort of the same thing every time he talks in every different city,
right.
And he travels incessantly, and he has the exact same rap. And you could hear that from Ashley and from Greg. They both say the same thing. The only difference is that Greg is in a position to actually hand people vouchers and get them off the street. And that's what he says he's going to do, for God's sake.
Has he done any of that yet?
No.
Okay, well, when does he say he's going to begin this great, this land of voucher opportunity?
Well, the time frame that he gave me was that it'll be about, he's going to bring it before the city council within about 4 weeks. Then it will start unrolling in about 6 weeks. An update to, I heard you talking about the railroad property over on H Street a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And that I just got word that there seems to be some progress in holding off on that eviction, and that is because Greg has talked to the railroad, and they've agreed that they're going to hold off for, I think, 6 weeks until he comes out with these vouchers to give people...
How many people are affected over at the railroad? I'm sorry.
Hundreds.
Hundreds.
The encampment that has developed there over the last 9 months, I would say, has 200 people living in it.
And is this a new phenomenon, these large encampments? I mean, you've been living in Fresno for, what, a couple decades now?
Let's see, 56 years now? Yeah.
Wow, you're an old-timer. You're a hardcore Fresnoite.
This is different than anything I've seen. And I don't know that there's much of anything like this in any other place where it's been totally hands off by the city. They haven't tried to determine the policies or, you know, anything at these encampments.
Well, no other city has gotten 2.3 million squeezed out of it by activists like yourself, and, along with legal support, right?
Well, that's true. I think this was the largest settlement of its kind in the country, so that may have something to do with it. But yeah, people are building houses there with foundations and framed walls and pitched roofs.
Are they up to code?
Well, I don't know. They're probably up to somebody's code, but they're at least in as much code as the tool shed that the city of Fresno has put homeless people in over at the Poverello House. They put up about 100 tough sheds, which is something like you'd put in your backyard to put your lawnmower in.
The doghouse approach.
Yeah, they put two homeless people in each tool shed, and they've called that home. So if they can get away with that code violation, then I suppose people who are living out...
Well, we have the same situation here in Santa Cruz. I mean, we have a sleeping ban law, which makes it illegal to sleep in, not only just outside or in a vehicle after 11 at night, but in any structure. You can't sleep in a movie theater. You can't sleep in a restaurant. You can't sleep in a church. You can't sleep in an office building. All these are illegal because they're not domiciles. However, the official city program puts people inside churches on the floor of churches, although many of these churches, or some of them anyway, are outside the city limits. But for those that are inside the city limits, I'm not aware that there are permits for any of them. And so you have obviously the same kind of double standard there as here. Now, you also were suing, you had a new lawsuit you mentioned last time against, was it Poverello House's sweeps and destruction of homeless property, this group of poverty pimps masquerading as homeless helpers who kind of tried to eliminate encampments and destroy people's property that were outside on the public street?
No, Robert, you got it all wrong.
Whoops, sorry about that.
It's another group of poverty pimps.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Called the Rescue Mission.
Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies to Poverello House and their tool sheds. I'm
disparaging their name like that.
Yeah, no. I apologize, PH or Poverello's.
The Rescue Mission has engaged in sending their disciples. They have a crew of people that are... in training, a lot of times these people are sent to them by the courts through drug diversion programs or something, and they're forced to work for the Rescue Mission.
Watch
and,
it.
Yeah. Well, see, you got me going there. They're forced to work for the Rescue Mission, and part of their job has been in the past to go out and destroy homeless encampments. They dismantle the tents and the structures that homeless people built, throw away their property. And, yes, some of the homeless people, because of the lawsuit we filed against the city of Fresno and successfully got a settlement were inspired by that. And now they have filed a lawsuit against the Rescue Mission for the loss of their property. And in some cases, people had their medicine taken and they had heart medicine and the Rescue Mission took it and destroyed it, and they suffered health consequences from that. So there's, you know, several issues involved.
This is a waiting time of, what, 1 or 2 years before they know whether they're going to win this thing or not? Is it a federal lawsuit again? Or
no, this has been filed in Superior Court.
Oh.
And
that's a state court, and usually less sympathetic to such things.
From what I've heard most recently, there have been depositions that have been that's sort of the phase that they're in right now.
Now, is this a separate group? Is this a separate group of attorneys than the three groups of attorneys you got together for your famous $2.3 million victory? Is this another group of attorneys?
It is, yeah. The Central California Legal Services, which is a legal service group here in Fresno. They might have it in other cities as well. They probably do. They work with low-income folks that have legal issues and they can't afford to to pay for it. So
were they emboldened, do you think, by this the victory of the federal lawsuit?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. This has a lot to do with why they filed these suits. Some of the people were in both. They were class members of the federal lawsuit, and now they're individual claimants in the lawsuit against the rescue men.
And you've mentioned on a number of occasions that, you know, Santa Cruz would do well to follow suit by essentially gathering a lot of photographic and video and audio documentary evidence of the seizure and destruction of property and then presenting it to, you know, lawyers interested in some nice fat legal fees or at least maybe hopefully a winning case. And I'm wondering, did you have that same documentary evidence for the folks who are being, by your perspective, victimized by the rescue mission? Did they have a lot of documentary evidence and they presented it to the Central California Legal Services? Is that why they got involved? Or
it did have a lot to do with why they took the case on. And yes, I did have photos of the rescue mission disciples destroying the homeless encampments up on the hill, and other photos that I was able to acquire of people reclaiming their lost tents and blankets from the rescue mission dumpster. Mm-hmm. And frankly, Larry Arce, who's the director of the rescue mission, admitted in federal court during our preliminary hearings that he did exactly what he's being accused of.
He was proud of it, probably.
Yeah, and he was proud of it. He said these people would be stupid to leave their property outside of the rescue mission, and he had every right to clean up the property around his
building. Well, it's part of the religious teachings of our Lord and Savior that, you know, thou shalt not allow homeless property to remain unattended on the street, right?
Yeah, so, one of our attorneys asked him, you mean if somebody came to the mission for a warm meal, and they left their shopping cart with their few possessions in it on the sidewalk outside of the mission, you would destroy it? Yes, he said he would.
It's interesting. In Fresno, it seems your churches have less concern and compassion than your authorities. If your analysis of Greg Barfield, or if his past record, which doesn't seem to be bad based on what you've told me. It sounds like it's got some positive aspects to it. Your new homeless czar over there actually proceeds. I guess, though, here in Santa Cruz, it's the other way around. The churches are struggling to give meals on occasion and help, and you know, the merchants are using the city's laws and the city's police to harass even from singing religious songs on the sidewalk. I mean, I'm not a big fan of religious songs. I told the Metro to stop piping out religious music and religious sermons on Sunday on taxpayer money, but I sure as heck think that those who, you know, want to sing religious songs, particularly if they're giving away food to poor people, should damn well be allowed to do so. And that these people are still charged with disturbing the peace in a November arrest that happened. Actually, the citations, I don't think they were arrested. They were arrested only long enough to cite them. But again, it's a different kind of situation. You've also, I'm asking questions about these, you know, the attorneys and the authorities and the poverty pimps, but what about the homeless folks themselves? What percentage of the homeless community would you estimate is actually organized into communal living groups, at least in the sense that they live together and provide some measure of mutual support? I know that a lot of it's simply people just happen to be living in the same area.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that can still be a way of providing a kind of de facto community, no?
Well, I think a lot of people do. You know, there's very large congregations or collectives of homeless people, and they sort of segregate themselves along some different lines. For example, probably the largest encampment right now is on H Street, just north of what's called New Jack City. New Jack City is largely African Americans. It's under an overpass, and the other encampment just north of there is almost entirely Mexicans, and the Mexicans largely are immigrants. Many of them, I suspect, are undocumented, although don't tell anybody that. And I think also they are largely from particular regions of Mexico. Like you might have a large number of Oaxacans in one little section of that community, and then, you know, down a little ways you might have people who are from Sinaloa. So people are sort of divided along some racial and ethnic lines.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely they're organized. They have large campfires together. They cook together. They share things. It's more of a sense of a neighborhood than most people have in the suburbs.
Well, at New Jack City, apparently they share one toilet and one security guard guarding that toilet, right?
Yeah, it's actually, I think they put 3 or 4 portable toilets out there now. But, yeah, they've
is that
got a full-time guard.
Greg Barfield again moving in to expand these sanitation facilities? Or?
Well, Greg would tell you he's opposed to that. He doesn't think that that's a good use of city money to pay for guards to watch toilets.
Well, they could always line up, I said, outside the Johns at City Hall. I suppose that's a possibility, right?
Yeah, well, what, 8 to 5, but, you
right.
know, you know, things happen outside those hours.
They could crap in the streets.
They could, but to tell you, most people who are homeless here are very shy and, you know, they're not confrontational.
Why doesn't Greg think there should be toilets out there, you know, until such time as his wonderful voucher scheme comes to fruition?
Well, here's his thinking on that, and you tell me what you think. He feels that they're going to have a voucher system up and running in 6 weeks. He doesn't want to put his time and energy into developing infrastructure in the existing encampments right now.
Bringing over porta potties is not developing infrastructure. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm just saying wants to spend the money he has on vouchers rather than putting it into, doing the other work that it would take to get. Because he, you know.
It's not
probably
very expensive.
Probably what would happen is you'd have to, you know, in order for him to get that through, you'd probably have to hire another security firm to watch the portable toilet at $13,000 a month, which is crazy.
You know, I don't understand why. I'm sure there are porta potties all over Fresno that are not being watched by security firms.
Absolutely.
So the notion that homeless people are somehow more violent, dangerous, and dirty than, you know, I don't know, construction workers is ridiculous. I mean, in San Francisco, you know, they have the mad arsonist who's running around burning all the portable toilets. I don't know if you've been following that in the papers.
The first I've heard of it, but.
Yeah, no, 13 of them have been burned as of 2 days ago or something. And so people have taken to camouflaging their porta potties. It's in fact, there's a new firm now that specializes in camouflaged porta potties. But you know, this is just another example of the kind of prejudice. You know, it's like it seems to me. But
well,
I'm sorry, you know, that you asked for my opinion, so there it is. I'm blurting it out.
So know. I mean, so you know, you have so much time and energy to put into things, and you know, the guy is going to be getting permanent. Decent housing for people. You know, you could, you know, encourage him to go in that direction, or you can beat him up because he's not providing another toilet.
Have you
out
seen
there.
The money? I mean, have you seen the actual appropriations that he's got supposedly to do all this great work with? I mean, has he presented to you the specific budget? Has he showed you any of the greenbacks?
Well, I have seen the city. The city does have millions of dollars. For land acquisition for homeless people, and that's in their budget right now. And you know, that's what he's going to be accessing.
This was the amount of money that they didn't spend last year that they were supposed to spend on homeless people, right?
$3 million last year that was designated for this, which they didn't use a dime of it, as far as I can tell. And now they have $2 million this year. I don't know if that means they have $5 million total or They just got the $2 million for this year, and the other three went to.
Well, that makes a significant difference. I'd encourage you to find out what the real situation is there. We're talking with Mike Rhodes, who's activist, writer, rabble rouser. Actually, rabble rousing. There's going to be another guy called Rabble Rouser Mike, who's coming on in 15 minutes from St. Louis. So you might want to listen into that, Mike. You get some tips from an even more rabbly, rousery kind of guy.
But, I can only imagine.
We have also talked to you recently about your work in Madera and it's not Modesto. What's
Merced.
Merced, two other neighboring communities around that Central Valley area where in Madera there was a city council meeting. Lots of homeless people were with the support of local civil liberties legal assistance group. We're complaining for the first time in mass about police misconduct at a city council meeting. Do you want to have any updates on the surrounding communities? Is a network of homeless solidarity growing, or what's going on?
Well, I talked to Vernon Price. He's a homeless guy in Madera. I talked to him yesterday, and he was telling me that things haven't gotten better since they visited the city council, and that was impressive. I mean, you have the entire chambers of the city council in Madera.
Have or haven't gotten better? I missed that.
Has not.
It have
has
not gotten better. Okay, go ahead.
And he said he was very agitated about a situation that happened at a McDonald's there, where they have put in a big screen TV, and a number of his friends went there, got coffee. They were customers. They were watching TV. The manager came over and told them that this television was not for you people, and that they would have to leave. And then she turned it off, and told them that they had to leave. And he was very upset about that because he feels like, hey, I'm a customer. I come here. I buy coffee. I drink coffee, I talk to my friends, and what, you kicked me out for that? So he wanted to know what could be done about that situation. And I was going to go and talk to him and tell him a little bit about the experience we had at McDonald's here, where a homeless person actually got arrested for trying to use the toilet at McDonald's.
What was the outcome of that case?
The outcome was that just as we were getting an attorney interested in looking at this, Sherry Williams, who's the woman that was involved, she just at the time when we were going to do some paperwork on this, take it to court because we felt that her rights were violated, she unfortunately died at community hospital, basically for lack of care. She'd been in a wheelchair and she had an infection and went to the hospital, and they prematurely released her, literally putting her in a taxi, sending her out to a dirt field, and dumping her on the ground at the dirt field where she got. Her infection got worse, and then when she went back in again to the hospital because she didn't recover from the first time, she passed away.
Well, I guess two questions. One's more important than the other. The first one has to do with hospital care and the number of homeless deaths in Fresno. And in Santa Cruz this year, there seemed to be a much smaller number of reported homeless deaths, which comes up every year on December 20th or thereabouts at the Homeless Service Center, where there's a memorial, and many cities have this for homeless people.
Mm-hmm.
The year before, there was between 35 and 45 deaths. This year, there was 20, supposedly. I just wondered if, there's been a wonderful market improvement in the last year of the Bush-Coonerty regime. Coonerty's our mayor. Bush, of course, was the president. Or whether, we got crappy statistics, and I haven't been able to get a clear reading. What's happening in Fresno? Is your death rate and hospitalization care situation improving? Is there any documentation of what's going on there? What's happening with that?
It's horrible here, and we don't have any good statistics on it. All we have is lots and lots of anecdotal stories about people who are being released prematurely, and sometimes they die because of that. And at the very least, they end up going back to the emergency room because they don't get the care they needed in the first place.
Mm-hmm. So, and then the secondary and the smaller question was about accessibility of McDonald's public facilities to homeless customers in Fresno. You mentioned that it was a big issue, you know, the big screen accessibility to McDonald's over in Madera. But what about in Fresno itself, that case? I mean, are people getting access to these places? I know when I worked in Santa Barbara as a homeless advocate, we used to meet every morning or every other morning at, I don't know whether it was at one of these fast hamburger places. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when there was hassles, we would do sit-ins, we would do picketing and so mm-hmm. forth. And we generally got around it because we were pretty careful. We wanted to preserve this as a meeting place. So we were respectful of the property. But if we encountered bigotry, we tried to say, hold it, you know, no thanks. You know, we'll inform the public and see if they want to keep patronizing. You know, we'll raise a stink. I guess that's what you were doing to some extent over at
We did that at McDonald's in Fresno. There was demonstrations held. There was, people definitely heard this story in Fresno about how McDonald's had discriminated against Sherry. In our newspaper, we put it on the front page.
That's the Community Alliance's newspaper. How can people read that, by the way?
Well, you can come to our website, which is communityalliance.com, and all of our articles are there for you to read.
Huh. What can people do to support you and other homeless groups in Fresno that are trying to expand the homeless civil rights entitlements and just basic rights that others have that poor people and those outside are denied? I mean, it sounds like, you know, Fresno is really kind of leading the pack here in many ways. I mean, it's true in San Diego and Los Angeles, it's legal to sleep on the streets at night. And there's a lawsuit in Sacramento around this. Palo Alto hasn't yet passed a sleeping ban, and it hasn't had one for a while. And Richmond has declared a law accepting telling cops not to go after people who don't have shelter at night.
Uh-huh.
And Laguna Beach, the ACLU has filed a lawsuit. So there's some things happening around the state, but you guys are still way out in front. Is there any particular things coming up that people should be aware of that you can use support on, or are you going to help come over here and help us in Santa Cruz for one?
Well, I would encourage people there, because that's where most of your listeners probably are, is in Santa Cruz, to document any instances of abuse or bigotry towards homeless people. Film it. Use a camera. Video is really good because it's hard to dispute that. And that's what won the case here for us. And I think that documenting what's going on there is the first step in defending people's rights.
Well, we're talking with Mike Rhodes, and we're about to let you go, Mike, because I'm bumping into the time of Rabble Rouser Mike from St. Louis.
Well, I can't wait to hear him.
Well, he probably can't wait to get on. He's forgotten to call twice, and he's felt very shame-faced about it. He made it a point of calling early today, and that was... You know, we didn't want to take away from your time there, Fresno,
well,
Mike.
Well, he'll call you, I'm sure, this time. And I appreciate you giving me an opportunity to talk about what's going on out here in the Central Valley, and we'll do it again soon.
Indeed. And if people want to hear your interview with Fresno's new homelessness czar, they have all only but to go to indiebay.org/Central Valley and look on the right side of the screen for local news, and you can download the MP3 file, I guess, and hear it.
Yeah, it was fascinating. I encourage your listeners to go and hear that interview.
Well, thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Robert. Talk to you later.
All right, man.
Bye.
And that was Mike Rhodes of Fresno, again, of the Community Alliance. If you're more interested, Google for the Community Alliance Fresno, and you can read the newspaper. He's involved in a lot of struggles, ranging from civil rights for gay, transgender, lesbian, bisexual people, to immigrant rights, to anti-war protests. He's one of them lefty types. So More power to him. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Call-in number is 427-3772. You can also call in at 469-3119. I'm going to start trying to leave the phone open at 7, but I have a few minutes before then in case you'd like to call in. I'm also interested in kind of drawing your attention, if you're a computer person, to some stories recently written online. I'm going to try to be, most of my writing hitherto has been on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, on the Santa Cruz Indie Media. And I often praise them. I regularly denounce them for the censorship they do. I praise them for often the good reporting they do. And I really would like to see more independent news services available. And there is one apparently that is available. It's called the Courant Times, C-O-U-R-A-N-T-T-I-M-E-S. And it's like at www.couranttimes, and I think it's .org, but it might be .com. But in any case, check out Courant Times. I've agreed to start writing a weekly column there, and we'll see if I can actually do that. I talk is cheap. I'm supposed to, my deadline's Monday. I'm supposed to get something into them. The issue that's coming up most immediately, of course, is the new series of downtown ordinances that are coming our way on Tuesday, compliments of the secret committees of Mayor Matthews, former Mayor Coonerty, and Santa Cruz neighbors champion Lynn Robinson, three council members who are pushing anti-homeless laws and failed solutions, or kind of paranoia pandering ideas that some of them have been tried and failed. Some of them shouldn't even be looked at. A lot of them are simply sprucing up the old laws, when in fact the old downtown ordinances essentially establish a whole series of downtown forbidden zones where you can't sit. A whole bunch of innocent behaviors, you can't do it. You can't sit within 14 feet of a building. You can't hold a sign up and spare change within 14 feet of a building. You can't have a political table within 10 feet of a building, or you can't be a street performer within 10 feet of a building and having an open guitar case, which means that on most sidewalks of most business districts in town, all of these activities are completely illegal. Passed by the Matthews-Rotkin Council, initially as a 6-foot from the house, from the building forbidden zone, and now in 2009, actually, since 2002 and thereabouts, it's been 14 feet. So it's all squishing people's rights into very small, constricted spaces, and then wondering why you get so much bad behavior from people who should know that they're supposed to, you know, be very polite and respectful to those police officers who enforce these kinds of bad laws. I mean, it's ridiculous. And we've got lots of extra police and overtime, I think, happening. Although I haven't got the documentation for it, we do know that the city council is wailing and screaming, and the city manager is raging and roaring about the union workers taking up the budget. But at the same time, they're spending huge amounts of money on the cops to enforce absurd laws, that some of which just criminalize essential life functions, like the sleeping ban. Others of which are designed to give merchants the power to say, I don't want him in front of my store, even if all he's doing is sitting there, even if he's not blocking or she's not blocking anything. I don't want that musician playing that song there instead of the person, instead of a kind of a community interaction where you go out and you talk to the person and you say you've played the same tune for the last hour, which is what used to be the case. Between 1980 and 2002, we had the street performers' guidelines, which were not laws. They were just advisory, kind of peer-developed guidelines that people kind of agreed to use. And if some people didn't use them, then there was some peer pressure on them. They didn't usually last too long if they were, or they would sometimes be harassed, they would be called to account if they were, spending a long amount of time engaging in there's a law against unreasonable noise, for example. Although I pointed out the law is pretty flawed and generally wrongly used by the police to go after musicians that residents and downtown merchants just don't like. That seems to be reason enough for the police to tell a musician to move on, when in fact it's not. You have to show there's a standard of unreasonable noise. It's not bad taste in music. It's unreasonable noise. That's the standard in Santa Cruz. I mean, they can change the law. You can set up a whole permit system. You can start, you know, running people through their paces. You can insist that, you know, that they pretend like they're on Broadway and we do have a talent search. But that's not what Santa Cruz has traditionally done. And I think, in a way, it's very good that you do have this open-air freedom, or have had, although, again, it's been decreasing repeatedly over the last, well, since 2002 when the street performers' guidelines were abandoned under the Porter Riley, and then later supported by Matthews and Rotkin and Coonerty and, frankly, the whole city council. We have a new set of ordinances coming up, as I said, and I've written about this on Indie Bay. And these are ordinances we haven't been able to get a lot of information on. There may be an agenda out now online. I'm going to take a look and see if the actual ordinances are being promulgated, so you can actually see what's happening. They're supposed to, within 72 hours of the council meeting, which is coming up on Tuesday, they're supposed to have the agenda out, which should include this kind of information. So let me take a look, see what I can find. You can also take a look and go to the Santa Cruz City website, their official website, and you click on City Council Quick Links, Next Minute, and the current agenda is, no, it's not up yet. They only have one for last Tuesday, which was a special meeting, and concerned only, it concerned only, still waiting for it to come up. Some litigation with the fire and police departments, and some closed session council stuff, and it. Well, actually, interesting. Well, maybe not. No, there wasn't much happening at that agenda. But anyway, there is a city council meeting next Tuesday that's going to be hot and saucy. If anybody wants to show up, where they're going to be passing, again, more anti-homeless laws, which I'm going to be talking about in a moment, or possibly in 15 or 20 minutes. But right now we do have a caller. And let's see who that caller is. Hey there, you're at Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hey, Robert, this is Michael Rabble Rouser.
Hey there, Michael Rabble Rouser. Welcome to the airwaves.
All right. Well, so are we on live?
You are live and in person, and people can hear you, and assuming, of course, that you speak up. And I think you're good. You're coming in good.
All right.
And I know that you called in before because you heard a show, and either you liked what you heard or you didn't like what you heard. I don't quite remember what the subject we were talking about was.
Oh, no, well, you were talking about homelessness and homelessness issues, and I was just calling to point out there was a lot of discussion about, the homelessness. And I said, you know, the problem with the state is, and with these charitable organizations, is they're doing nothing to battle homelessness. It's a battle against the homeless. And there's a vital difference between fighting against people and fighting against a disease or a symptom of capitalism or a symptom of an oppressive regime. And it seems that there's a lot of criminalization of the people, but nothing to be done to fight the problem.
And how is that manifesting itself in St. Louis, Missouri, where you're speaking from?
Well, just today, actually, there was an article in the paper. There's a group doing a census here, and they're calling for 200 volunteers, and they're using a lot of the same language that the Obama campaign used about working together for change. And these 200 volunteers are going to be going around doing a in the time count, where they count homeless people by pointing them out and counting them on the streets, by going to the areas where the police say the homeless congregate, or a lot of areas where they've kind of been pushed away or hidden away, such as railroad yards here, abandoned buildings, where these people have made squatted homes and reside in to stay safe and try to stay warm and live in their own communities here.
It's kind of cold in St. Louis, right?
Well, it was 60 degrees today, actually.
Oh, that's nice.
But they're calling for one of the coldest winters later on this winter season.
What's the standard temperature? What do you go down to in the winter, usually?
Usually, well, it'll get down to freezing and below in the winter, usually. At night, it'll get down, you know, sometimes 10 below with a wind chill.
10 below zero or 10 below freezing?
10 below zero with the wind chill.
Wow.
In the winter at times.
That's pretty cold.
Yeah, and funny enough, we just actually are at the place where we're getting together to have band practice tonight, and across the street is a large dumpster. They've cleared out the apartments, and it's in a pretty affluent college area, and the dumpster is full of perfectly good blankets that are sealed in plastic, and so we just pulled them out and liberated them from the dumpster. It just makes no sense to me. They're reporting this, and in this liberal college area, they're throwing away a dumpster full of clothes and blankets.
Well, in Santa Cruz, Rebel Rouser, Mike, you'd get a ticket for scavenging, so don't try that here in Santa Cruz, okay?
Oh, I can't promise that I wouldn't try that when we come through Santa Cruz this year.
I'll alert the authorities.
The revolutionary doesn't obey laws. The revolutionary just doesn't get caught. That's the difference.
I see. Okay, well, we'll try to track you a little more closely there, Rebel Rouser.
Yeah, so well, anyway, this census that they're taking, that I was reporting on, is they're going to send these people out in groups to count the homeless so they can up their funding for the agencies here in town. And it has nothing to do with taking care of these people. It's all about counting them, getting a head count to raise the head count from last year. Apparently, last year's head count was 47. They took a head count of 47 homeless people. Now,
wait a minute, how big is St. Louis? How many 100,000 people are there?
Oh, there's probably 1.5 million or so, maybe a little less.
So you've really solved the homeless problem. Only 47 homeless people in a city of 1.5 million. I commend you, Mike. That's a great work.
Yeah, well, you know, we had a lot of help from when Obama came to speak under the arch. They really helped us clear the homeless out down here by just shushing them off and sweeping them under the rug. So.
Well, you wouldn't want Obama to be embarrassed by all these homeless people. I mean, you know.
No, we would hate for him to see people, poor people and people of color, you know, feeling any kind of stress.
Well, that reminds us. That reminds people of the unfortunate past. We're looking into the future now.
Right, right. Yeah, we don't want to talk about negative things. We have to have hope, right?
Right.
So, well, the other part of this article talked about how not only are these groups going to go around and count the homeless to raise the level so they can get more funding, they're also going to be chauffeured by a plainclothes policeman that's going to protect these, you know, good citizens while they go out and count the homeless in case something bad happens. But they're also going to be there to protect the homeless by keeping them safe and getting them out of bad situations, which translates into real language as they're going to go in and bust up these squats and move these people out and send them onto the street. Maybe if the homeless are lucky and it's cold enough, they might get arrested and get to spend a couple days in jail. But most likely they're just going to be shooed away and given bench warrants or citations of some sort. And the people are falling for this. Now we're dealing with one of the largest housing foreclosures in the country is in North County, St. Louis. And people are falling for this. People are actually excited about the proposition that if they count the homeless, and then the government has knowledge of these homeless people, that they're going to get funding to take care of these poor homeless people. It's disgusting.
Well, I guess
no mutual aid.
The thing to ask you as a devil's advocate, as a governmental advocate, would be, do you have any knowledge of how current funding for the social programs in St. Louis is supposed to be diverted to homeless survival needs is actually happening? In other words, what percentage goes to administration, how much say do homeless people have in these programs, and yada, yada, like that?
No, I mean, I don't have exact numbers for those things, but I will tell you that last month we went to speak at a panel discussion where HUD members were on the panel, and it was held at a black bookstore in St. Louis, in North St. Louis, and you get to the parking lot, and there's probably 150 people inside, and the cars in the parking lot were that of the working class and poor class, except for the four members of the HUD panel who were driving brand-new hybrid cars that were all parked right
only
in front
the
of the
best.
Building.
Only the best for our government workers, you know.
Right, right. And and there's a waiting list. Apparently there's a couple projects here that are empty. I don't remember the names of them, but I wrote them down that night. And there's a waiting list for people to get into these, and these are empty projects at this point, empty housing projects, because they're renovating the projects. So they cleared the families out, and they're now renovating them. But what we see happening is what happened about 3 years ago. They started renovating the lower income neighborhoods and the destitute neighborhoods, and after renovations, those property values skyrocketed to the point where the city thought it would be beneficial to sell these to private realtors and use that money to purchase other properties elsewhere. And these private realtors turned these into condominiums. Now, the one person who did not sell was a gentleman by the name of Larry Rice, who runs a homeless organization and has for the last 40 years in this one building right in the center of downtown. And now the owners of those condominiums have banded together to sign a petition to get Larry Rice's homeless shelter shut down because they feel it's a blight upon their community. And if they pay $300,000 for a condo, they don't want to have to see homeless people. How do you explain this to my child, was what one guy said. How am I supposed to explain to my child why there's a man sleeping on our front step?
It's pretty sordid, you have to admit. You know, I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, those filthy human beings, son, they really shouldn't be taking up all this space that we pay for.
Well, another thing that happens with census activity, which also happens in Santa Cruz, they've had these census counts, is that a day or two after the census, you will suddenly find police going around making sweeps in areas where the census was determining homeless people were. So it can also serve as a kind of intelligence operation for the police force, and it's kind of unfortunate when that happens, but perhaps inevitable. I don't know.
Sure, and I think that brings us to the larger question here is what is the state's function? What is the police function? And if this is their function is to do this, that would be considered occupation when they can move in and move people off of land and out of their homes or out of certain areas and reclaim it for the property of the state. That's by definition occupation. And so when we're fighting and talking about the occupation of Gaza, which is a horrible, horrible thing to be happening, but to be honest, our protests in the streets here against Gaza aren't going to do anything to affect the people of Gaza or help them in any way while we continue to obey the police here that are acting in the fashion of an occupying force. And so people really need to stand up. And you know, I got to commend Oakland. I don't know if Oakland is within your listening range. But
oh, yeah. You're talking about Oscar Grant and the angry protests that followed his execution on January 1st.
Absolutely, and the following protests, that not just the one day of protests, there's been multiple days of direct action against the state, and they want to write this up as being anarchist activity. Well, unfortunately, there's not that many anarchists in Oakland. There are enough, and there are not enough. There are a few, and they are doing good things, but this certainly does not account for the community standing up against police repression. Now, not every one of those people are anarchists. They're just human beings fighting back against a force that is deadly, a deadly disease, just as any community would band together to ward off any disease. And that's what these people, the good people of Oakland, are doing when they stand up and they brick a cop car window. They're really fighting against the people that damage them and threaten their lives daily. That's what any people would do in this situation. And if it's done anywhere else, it's considered to be an act of self-preservation. But when poor people and people of color do this, then all of a sudden it's some kind of criminal activity.
What's been happening in St. Louis around this? Do you have, have there been in the last two or three decades occasions when the St. Louis poor have risen up and demanded their rights either violently or nonviolently?
Not in the last 10 years or so. At least there hasn't been any massive movements of the poor here because they've done so good with their spatial deconcentration, with their ability to come in and break up poor neighborhoods and spread them out over the city. That's one thing that St. Louis is really known for, is there's no real centralized ghetto of St. Louis. It's kind of a block by block situation. One block will be new build condos, and the next block will be poor families and liquor stores and pawn shops, and then the next block again will be new build condos or rebuilds. And they've done that, and it's a very intelligent thing they've done, actually, for the state. They did a study in 68 called the Kerner Commission, where they actually studied areas in large cities that were racially and economically concentrated for poor and people of color, and they did this because of the Detroit riots. And so HUD actually enacted a program starting in St. Louis to deconcentrate these areas of poor people, and they've spread them around, so there's not really a lot of solidarity amongst the poor in St. Louis, and that's all because of the function of the state. It's been amazing how well they've been able to do this. For instance, just recently there was an anarchist push for a march in solidarity with Greece and against police violence here, because, you know, police violence doesn't just exist in Oakland or in New York City. Police violence is rampant anywhere police are. And St. Louis happens to be an area there have been a lot of police violence against poor people, and about 40 people showed up to the march. And, of course, nothing brings out a violent cop more than people standing up against police violence. And of the people that were at the march, six were arrested, and many more were physically harmed and accosted by police. But as far as the poor uprising, no, not since the riots in probably 69, I think, was the last good riot that happened in St. Louis, in East St. Louis.
Uh-huh.
So,
but East St. Louis is still, isn't it largely African American, or?
Yeah, it is, and it's funny because East St. Louis is actually not Missouri. East St. Louis is Illinois, so it's under a different state program, and they haven't yet managed to gentrify East St. Louis. It's actually kind of the place where they dump all of the strip joints and the casinos and things like that, because it attracts the attention from Missouri, who can go over there and drink for 24 hours at a 24-hour bar in East St. Louis.
That's where you're going to head after you do your stint here on the show, or?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We're going to go, you know, spare change on Del Mar, which is the rich area that we're having band practice in, and then we're going to take that right over across the river there, mm-hmm. Dump it all back into the state.
So we have our sort of ineffectual, often symbolic and token attempts to monitor the police, although we're trying to set up a website here that essentially is a database called Santa Cruz Cop Watch, which is going to provide ordinary people with an opportunity to add data to the every particular under a particular officer's name and badge number and picture. If you've had good experience with this officer, write it down here. If you have bad experiences, write it down, so that there can be kind of a record independently kept, although, of course, you know, it makes us vulnerable to lawsuits, or it makes, I guess, the writers vulnerable to defamation lawsuits at some level. People have to be cautious not to make false and defamatory statements, you know, that sort of thing.
Sure. We wouldn't want to offend the perpetrators of violence. I mean, we have to keep in mind that the victims are victims because they were asking for it.
Well,
so,
you know, I have to say that, and I mean, I believe that, you know, if you make a false or defamatory statement about anybody, you know, it's a false and defamatory statement, whether you believe in using the law courts to deal with it, or whether you just want to say, you know, you're a liar, motherfucker, that's not true, and don't spread misinformation. So, you know, it's a difficult question of how to deal with a website where you don't want to censor people, but you also want to provide some level of, you know, what you consider to be responsible commentary. It's always, I guess, that you may have that problem yourself if you're involved with, you know, some kind of online website, or you may have the problem of being censored by online websites. Anything like that happening in your neck of the woods?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. There's being censored. Now, there's any media here that's actually trying really hard to rebuild itself as a community media, as opposed to just the two or three writers who contribute regularly, and they're doing a really good job. And there's also Infoshop.org, which is run out of Kansas City, Missouri, by Chucko is one of the guys running that. And he tries really hard to moderate, not censor, but moderate, to make sure that there's just not a bunch of bullshit getting posted. But as far as censorship on the web, no, not so much we haven't encountered, but what we have encountered, well, there's a liberal group here that goes by the name of Instead of War that has been working with the cops for the last few years, and they turned us in prior to a march because they assumed that we were violent because we were anarchists, despite the fact that we bring our toddlers with us to these marches. And the cops singled us out with help from this group and arrested three of us, beat up a bunch of us at this march recently, just real recently. And I tried to post our version of the story on their website, and their moderator of their comments wouldn't allow that to be posted because that would tarnish their good name.
But you were able to post it elsewhere? Or?
Yeah, and we're actually collecting a bunch of the emails that they sent out prior to the march to their quote-unquote peacekeepers, that actually instruct the peacekeepers to point out any anarchists to the cops and let the cops have their way with them. And so we have actual emails that we've gotten from people in the organization who were disgusted by this after the fact, and they forwarded us these emails. And we're going to put out a whole expose here relatively soon talking about, you know, liberal versus radical, which is it's an old argument, of course, but, you know, people need to understand that the dangers, especially a group that stands for nonviolence, working with the police, how contradictory that is. And, you know, as far as your website being worried about being inflammatory or anything
defamatory.
Police. I would say that if you're doing a report on violent gang members or crack dealers, you can pretty much generalize that they're not the best people, or at least if they are good people, they've chosen a really poor profession.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be safe and fair to say that all cops are bad, until proven otherwise. And I would recommend on your website having a link for cops to go to that offers classifieds for job openings in other professions. Because, you can always get another job. If you don't like beating people up or seeing people get killed in the BART station, if you don't like evicting poor people from their homes in the dead of winter, if you don't like those things, then maybe you could find another profession,
Open. Jobs are, of course, at a premium these days, as you know, with the economy sinking deeper. What's happening in St. Louis around that? Is the economic downturn turning down a lot? What's going on there?
Oh, well, yeah, but, we're also getting our fair share of menial corporate jobs such as Starbucks and McDonald's and Walmart and all of these places. And day labor is a really big one, which I'm sure that you have the same issue there. These are the companies like Manpower, who is actually the largest company in the country. They have the largest work base, meaning they have more people working for their company than any other company in the U.S. works for Manpower, which is a day labor organization that pays you by the day for the work you do by the day, but offers no job security, offers no benefits of any sort. And so more people in America work for that company than any other company, a company that pays them by the day for that day's work and, pays the minimum wage for that work. No matter what the work is, you get the same base pay and they have no job security. So we have that going for us here. But fortunately, the IWW has been pretty hardcore hitting at organizing day laborers in various places in the U.S., and I think that's going to catch on. The IWW, the Industrial Workers of the World, used to be the most venomous union in the country, and I think we're going to see a comeback of that. I think we're going to see more people as the economic crisis hits harder, more people are going to be forced to band together. Because they're just going to realize they can't do it alone.
Yeah, Santa Cruz used to have a wobbly chapter. In fact, here in 1994, either the state or maybe it was the National Wobblies held their convention here. We all slept out on the streets in front of Supervisor Coonerty's bookshop, Santa Cruz, because Coonerty, both the elder and the younger here in Santa Cruz, are politicians who've supported anti-homeless laws, such as the sleeping ban, and everybody slept illegally on the street, and police, of course, discreetly ignored the protest, and then when the IWW, moved on, and some of us continued to sleep out in solidarity with local homeless people, they moved in to arrest us, of course. So,
yeah, I think the anti-sleeping laws are just absolutely hilarious. You don't even have to do anything to be a criminal. Just close your eyes and turn your head 30 degrees southward, and all of a sudden, sit that way in lotus position for a little bit under a tree with a book, and all of a sudden, you're breaking the law. It's
actually illegal to read a book in a parking lot in Santa Cruz, even in your own vehicle, after you've paid to go into the parking lot. Because
as it should be, because reading really should be outlawed in this state. There's a lot of things that should be against the law.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Putting on makeup is also outlawed. You can't put on makeup in your car either.
Well, see, that's where I would draw the line.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there
I
has
really
to be.
Really can't go out without my lipstick.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. See, I mean, in other words, it's illegal to do anything according to our former Mayor Coonerty's law in Santa Cruz if you go into a parking lot, other than park your car or retrieve it and leave. That's all you can do. Used to be, parking lots were public places where you could do what you normally do in public places. But
sure, have sex and smoke dope.
Or just, I don't know, chat with a friend, or whatever.
Right,
that's illegal now. And, people have taken back some of these rights on different occasions when we have enough numbers. But unfortunately, folks have got a lot of things to do, and it's an endless struggle, as you may probably agree.
Yeah, and, it's funny. There's a lot of discussions about the political climate and the economic climate. And I've been doing a lot of thinking about this. We've been having a lot of talks amongst our collective. And we were talking about, if you look historically at, let's just take the American Revolution, for example. Look at what the uprisings were about. There wasn't a vast amount of poverty amongst the colonialists here, but there was taxation and there was laws about private property that were being, taken down on people, and people were being arrested for things that seemed meaningless, much like what's happening today. And people had to stand up and fight against this regime. Now, I'm not saying that the American Revolution was exactly a revolution, because we saw what took place afterwards, and, you know, it's not been so great. But I think that this would be a climate for something like that. But it's funny that people seem to want to wait for the revolution. They want to, I'll do it when everybody else is doing it. If we get enough people, then I'll get involved and get active. And I was just, I was thinking about it, and I was reading some Abby Hoffman writings and some Fidel Castro, even though I'm, you know, I'm not a communist, but Fidel had some good things to say. And one of the things he had to say was that anybody who's waiting for a revolution will never be a revolutionary. And you know, I'm not necessarily telling everyone to go out into the streets and punch a cop and everything's going to be better. No, not at all. But I think people really do need to start getting active, and that's outside of the voting polls and outside of their political ideologies. They need to really take back these streets, because they've been taken away from us. I mean, I remember even just, 20 years ago growing up in small towns, 30 years ago, you could go cruising and you could hang out outside on Main Street and sit down with your friends and smoke cigarettes and bullshit with each other. And, you know, that's just not allowed anymore. And I think that, I'm just wondering what people's tolerance is, what their threshold for pain is, and what their threshold for their freedoms being taken is. It really makes no sense to me that people aren't standing up more and fighting against this stuff. I know they want to say that I need to go to work, but for what? Really? You keep working so you can maybe make your house payment next month? Maybe? You know, what if we just stopped making those house payments? What if we just stopped working for the boss? Well, what if? It's a big what if, but what if, really? Am I an idealist for saying what if?
I was thinking, what if you called in on another line so we could actually have somebody have, other than me, have a dialogue with you? We might have some angry liberals who might want to chat with you about your questionable sentiments, or just some interested folks. Unfortunately, because of the line you called in and I gave you this phone number, it may be hard to dial in a second number. So let me get you to call back. Have you still got time, or you've got to get out of here? What's your story there?
I can call back for a little bit. Let me write down the number really quick.
Sure. The number to call back on is 831, and this is not for you or the rest of you listening, but this is just for Rebel Rouser Mike here from St. Louis, who we've been listening to. 831-469-3119. And we'll just and then we can have other people calling in and chatting with you, perhaps.
All right, sounds good.
All right, call right back.
All right, thanks.
Bye-bye. And I'm going to kind of wait until Rebel Rouser Mike calls back. You're tuned to Free Radio, in case you just tuned in. This is 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and the name of this show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Go for another half hour or so until 8, at which time, unless he's vacationing or snoozing or out boozing, it's going to be Uncle Dennis from the Cream to the Dregs doing 3 hours of music and ale sampling and environmental reporting and who knows what else. A guy is just very prolific, and he has a bigger collection of records than anyone can imagine. I think that's our man. Is that you, Rabble Rouser Mike?
It is. But from this point forward, I'd like to be known as Dick Cheney.
All right, Dick. We'll call you Dick for short.
Short Dick, actually. That sounds better.
Short Dick. I don't think size, it's the quality, not the quantity that counts, you know. So if people want to call in and talk to Dick here, or Rabble Rouser as he used to be known, you can. The call-in number here is 427-3772, and I think we can hook you up with him in case you have any questions. I don't know if we actually have anybody who wants to call in, because I'm getting... It's really hard for me to determine. We don't have a call screener. We don't censor calls unless I get annoyed enough to hang up on people or dial down their mics. But I'll try to let people at least have a brief say, if nothing else here. Again, the phone number is 427-3772. We have some new anti-homeless laws coming to town, Dick. And they are... I'm not sure if you... Let me know if at any time if your name changes again, because...
Okay, that's fine. I can go by Dick for now.
Sure. I don't know if you have laws like this in St. Louis, but in Santa Cruz we have laws that make it illegal to sit down on the sidewalk within 14 feet of a building in all business districts.
I haven't been busted for any of that shit yet, but I wouldn't put it past anybody to have those laws here and to use those laws. There's a lot of asinine laws that are on the books here that they haven't used in a long time. For instance, it would be okay if I were to decide to shoot an Indian if he were crossing the river in my direction,
that's still on the books here as being legal in Missouri, specifically in the county that I live in. But yeah, I'm sure that they would try to bust me for sitting on the sidewalk if they wanted to. You know, I mean, they're going to bust you for whatever they want to bust you for, and they're going to get away with it until we fight back. And it's just it's that simple. I don't know how to make it more clear to people that I don't think I should. I don't think it's my job or your job to make it clear to people the urgency to take back their lives. If they want to lose their lives, that's fine. It just makes it harder for all of us who are fighting like hell to keep ours. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's
I would love it if some of those liberals would call in. I would love to hear their justification for working with cops or supporting propping up a regime and supporting an oppressor. I mean, I would love to hear that. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's probably you probably are not going to get it on the station at this time because I don't know if liberals stay tuned to my show. I guess probably some liberals do stay tuned. There, a lot of people are very soft spoken in Santa Cruz. They don't call in much. We get a couple of regular callers who have very strong opinions that are usually very unique opinions, to be charitable on some occasions.
I've heard some callers on your show, and I love the way you handle them. It's hilarious.
Well, I try to be both fair and at the same time limited in the amount of time I give to people I'm impatient with. I mean, that's really has to be the bottom line since it's my show. What's coming up next Tuesday, 5 days down the line, I'm kind of trying to unite your section of the show, Mike, with or Dick, if you will. With the upcoming anti-homeless laws will be at City Council on Tuesday. There's going to be an ordinance that amends existing sections of the municipal code relating to non-commercial display devices, you know, like an open guitar case if you're playing a guitar, or a political table if you're, you know, giving out leaflets. Aggressive solicitation, that's panhandling, sitting on sidewalks, and occupancy of public benches. That's the new addition.
You can't sit on public benches.
There's now going to be a time limit of 1 hour on a public bench. So keep your watches with you at all times and be prepared to move if requested to do so by the local watchsmith.
You could always stake your ground on a public bench, write your name on it, and then declare it to be liberated land, and it's your liberated land.
Well, you know, I think the law actually stems probably from the behavior of one or two, it's hard to say, but I know that there's one musician downtown, CJ, his name is, who spends a lot of time on the bench. He has a large amount of homeless stuff with him. He's got blankets and backpack, and he spends many hours a day on that bench. And sometimes people sit there with him, and sometimes he sits alone. And I'm not aware, I've never noticed he has a bad odor or his behavior is relatively mild, so I don't think he's got bad behavior. But I have heard people, and actually I've actually heard other homeless people come up to me, one other homeless person, and denounce CJ for, you know, making a bad impression of other homeless people before the liberal and merchant community by so taking up so much time on the benches himself.
Yeah, he's making us all look bad, you know, by being out there in the open.
Right. The point being is that he's homesteading the benches. I mean that's the issue. And there are some people who feel that the proper use of public benches is, you know, to sit on them for a fairly brief period of time and then move on. Certainly not to spend the whole day on a bench, particularly in Santa Cruz where they have taken out half the benches in order to discourage the wrong kind of people from using them.
Now, last time I was in Santa Cruz, Robert, I seem to remember about half of the people on the main strip down there by the water being half naked.
Really?
Shirtless and, you know, going into the taco shop without a shirt on, without shoes, getting some tacos, everybody being pretty laid back and relaxed. And,
what year were you here?
Oh, I guess that was probably, I guess it was 97 or 98, maybe.
Times have changed.
I was there to see a local band, actually, Good Riddance. And if Good Riddance is still around there, or Russ Rankin's listening,
who knows? I could be. Yeah, I know that I'm trying to kind of alert people that there is this new law which essentially makes bench sitting for more than an hour illegal. It also makes it illegal to sit within 14 feet of a bench, I believe. And there's a new municipal code coming up which establishes the three unanswered citations becomes a warrant. And the commentary here is, in recent years, local courts have changed their method of handling violation of local municipal code provisions. This is in California. Now violations result in a civil citation rather than a warrant. If the citation is not cleared, it is handed over to a collection agency with little consequence to many of the most egregious repeat offenders. One chronic offender has racked up nearly $20,000 worth of citations during the past year with no consequence. Under the new proposed section, three unanswered citations within a six-month period would automatically become a warrant. This creates a meaningful consequence for repeat offenders. Now, my commentary on this is that under the Santa Cruz Municipal Code, it is currently a misdemeanor to engage in two infractions of the same kind within a six-month period. The only exception to that is the sleeping ban, which we had changed in about 9 years ago, 10 years ago now, after massive pressure from people on the streets, so it stays an infraction. But everything else can be charged as a misdemeanor. But you see, the legal system doesn't want to charge it as a misdemeanor here because that means you would get a jury trial, you would have a right to a public defender, and you would also, they would have to, you know, be provided with pretrial discovery and various residual legal rights, which for some reason still remain as kind of ragtag parts of our legal system, which you're entitled to. And it would cost them more. What they just want to do instead is essentially criminalize you if you don't answer three unanswered citations within a six-month period. The issue will be, for example, if you are caught spitting on the sidewalk twice, they could, instead of giving you a second infraction ticket for spitting, which is illegal in Santa Cruz, and which people have been ticketed for in the last month, instead of giving you an infraction citation twice, they could give you a misdemeanor. But that would mean going to a jury. And would 12 people actually convict a person and send them to jail for a year for spitting on the sidewalk? There's really a question there, see. So instead of that, they want to pass a new law that means if you don't answer your ticket, you're automatically going to go to jail, and they don't have to look into the substance of what the citations were. You follow what I'm saying?
Oh, of course, yeah.
So this is a way of kind of denaturing, dehumanizing, and depersonalizing what's going on here. It's like saying to the jury, you know, you're not supposed to consider whether smoking marijuana is right or wrong. You're supposed to consider whether simply it was smoked. And then you have to enforce the law and find the person guilty. But that's not really true. As you know, and you probably, you know, right-wing libertarians use this a lot because they're involved in the legal system in this way. They bring up the issue of jury nullification, which is that, or jury independence, as it's sometimes called, which is that, you know, the law is what the jury decides it is, in the sense that it can always say not guilty for many reasons and not have to explain itself. In fact, one juror saying not guilty in our state, I don't know if it's true in Missouri, hangs a jury, means that they have to go back and prosecute again. So the point of these new downtown ordinances for us is it makes it easier for the police to intimidate, it makes it easier for the merchants to scare away people, and it provides less legal protections for people and essentially discourages them from challenging bad laws by essentially innocent behavior. You don't have to break the windows of any police cars to do this. You don't have to punch out any cops. All you have to do is sit on the sidewalk and stay seated there, and in fact have 16 other people sit down next to you, and the police will kind of look at this and they will say, "Oops, we guess we better go do something else somewhere else, because why bother with this shit?" Because we've actually...
I think that's an important point, too, is to point out that not only does this get rid of the jury's ability to decide, a jury of one's peers, by the way, gets them to decide.
Well, I don't know about that, but yeah, right.
Well, right, but that's the point. It's like, we want to treat homeless people as something different than us, but yet we want to be their peers when it comes time to criminalize or prosecute them. There should be a jury of homeless people sitting on the jury to prosecute that homeless person. What this does is it leaves it to the cop's discretion, because not everybody who sits on a bench is going to get these tickets. Not everybody that spits on the sidewalk is going to get a citation. And that's up to the discretion of the police officer, which is very scary grounds.
Right. It's selective enforcement writ large. And that's what all these downtown ordinances fundamentally are. They're up to the discretion of the police officer, particularly those that involve a warning. I mean, you would think that a warning is a way of, you know, softening an ordinance. Some of the ordinances provide, after being warned, if a person continues to stay at her or his political table after having been that set up that table for an hour without taking it down, they're guilty of an infraction. Do it twice within 6 months, and they're guilty of a misdemeanor. That's the law in Santa Cruz. The key phrase here is warning. It's not the key phrase, but that's the phrase I'm focusing on. If the police officer chooses not to warn you, then they can ignore your table and move right along. So, in other words, it's completely selective. If a police officer sees the Democratic Party raising funds for Obama, or the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, a politically respectable group doing some, you know, campaigning, and being out there for 2 or 3 or 4 hours, they can ignore them. Whereas if suddenly a group of raggedy homeless people are starting the Homeless Liberation Front or armed resistance to troll busting, whatever they're doing, they can be removed very quickly and moved along by selectively enforcing this law by using the warning provision, saying, okay, now we're warning you. It doesn't say they have to warn you. They can choose when they want to warn you. So it's some laws, specifically those which have a warning provision, are even more capable of abuse. Sort of a minor point, because all these laws can be abused, and are abusive to start with. So that's the problem.
Right, and they generally affect people who are not property owners. That's the biggest issue.
Yeah, I would say that's generally true, because people are property owners unless they, you know, have some really, you know, classless kind of affiliations. Don't spend a lot of time downtown on the sidewalks. You know, they really don't. Property owners. I mean, at least that's been my experience. I haven't met a lot of rich property owners spending a lot of time down there. I mean, occasionally, you know, you do find the occasional person, but not usually.
Yeah.
So, Rabble Rouser, is there more that you want to pass on before we oust you from the airwaves, or let's put it this way, send you back to your squat in the ghetto to plot your next criminal behavior?
Well, actually, I'll just announce what our next criminal behavior is, because why not?
Okay.
On Easter Sunday this year, it happens to be the 20th anniversary of the death of Abbie Hoffman, and we've decided that we are going to, by use of magic and incantation, resurrect Sir Abbie Hoffman for the eyes of the world. And we could use as much help from freaks and weirdos and homeless people, drug addicts and junkies, as we can possibly get. So if everybody on Easter Sunday this year wouldn't mind going to Easter Mass at your local Catholic church there and becoming filled with the spirit of Abbie, that would really help out to bring Abbie back. And our feeling is, you know, Christ rose after 3 days of being dead, and Abbie's been dead for 20, but you got to cut him some slack. He was pretty stoned.
Mm.
So you know, we're going to resurrect Abbie this year. I think that's the next big thing we have cooking.
Well, all right. We'll keep an ear out for that. Maybe we can get some local religious figures to add color to this mournful or possibly celebratory ritual. I'm not sure how you're going to handle it. We have been talking with I'm not sure whether it's Little Dick or Rabble Rouser Mike, but we've been talking with somebody in St. Louis. Any places that people can go online to check out what you've been up to, or What the issues that you are concerned about, where, you know, some more detailed anecdotes or stories of St. Louis?
Check out stlimc.org. That's St. Louis Indie Media. And check out your own indie media spots there, of course. Infoshop.org is a great one. And blog fishing is really good. Lately, bombsandshields.blogspot.com has been doing some pretty awesome coverage of riots around the world, and you know, it's important for people to understand how those things function, how those riots function, and what effect it has on the society itself, the positive effect. So people can learn all that stuff by just learning and knowledge will lead to a less amount of fear of these things. You'll learn how easy it is to stand and resist. So that's pretty much it. As far as anything else, you know, fun searching on the web. Go find episodes of Jericho. It's a great show. It's hilarious. We love it. So that's about it.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabble Rouser.
Thank you, Robert. Take care.
Rouse the rabble. Thank you, man.
All right.
Bye. Bye-bye. And phone lines are open. 427-3772 is the number to call. And
let's take a musical break, although we're going to be having a lot of music over the next 3 hours with Uncle Dennis. But he's not going to be playing Young Frankenstein. And so this is probably your one chance to hear this tune if you haven't seen the movie. It's actually one of the few tunes that is actually in the earlier 1970s movie by Mel Brooks, Young Frankenstein, and in the 2008 musical, Young Frankenstein, which I think closed as musicals began to crash on Broadway a few months ago as the Depression deepened.
You're blue and you don't know where to go to. Why don't you go where fashion sits?
Margaret!
Different types who wear a day coat, pants with stripes and cutaway coat, perfect fits.
Margaret!
Dressed up like a $1 million trooper. Trying hard to look like Gary Cooper.
Superman!
Come, let's mix with Rockefellers, walk with sticks or umbrellas in their midst.
Superman!
Have you seen the Belvedere up and down Park Avenue?
On that famous thoroughfare, with their noses in the air. High hats and arrow collars. White spats and lots of dollars.
Spending every dime for a wonderful time.
If you're blue and you don't know where to go to, why don't you go where the fashion sits?
Put putting on the Ritz.
Different types who wear a day coat, prints with stripes and cutaway coat, the perfect fits.
Cha 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 cha. Putting on the Ritz.
Take it.
Thank you.
And that was Putting on the Ritz from Young Frankenstein. Lest you think that voices from the street have been forgotten, since nobody's called in from the street and since we haven't played anything in the last 2 hours nearly, I'm going to play a little more from the street, and I'll be back on Sunday to play even more from the street. We did a cop watch, as I said, did a lot of interviewing, and that was the day when Obama was crowned our new Führer, president, if you will, and there were people marching up and down the street, waving banners, celebrating, and so forth. I was spending my time shouting, what about the people of Gaza and things of that sort, which, you know, how about the war in Afghanistan where he's going to send more troops? But people didn't want to be diverted from their festivities, and so it's kind of interesting to hear some of the interplay there, although we didn't have a lot of intelligent conversation. There were some interesting cop watch discussions, too. I'm going to play now a little bit of an earlier cop watch. I believe this is actually from early December, or maybe it's mid-December. And these are interviews at the Cop Watch table during that month. And from there, we're going to kind of seg you out. And I will hope to that you'll join me again on Sunday morning when I'll be back, certainly by 9:30, sometimes earlier. And Thomas Levitt's the wake-up call. He starts between 7:30 and 8 usually and goes until 9:30 in the morning. I go from 9:30 to 1 in the afternoon. And you can also check out the Human Rights Organization meeting if you want to find more information about these upcoming ordinances, which, frankly, they seem less draconian than I had at first thought they were. However, we really need an abolition of these ordinances and a focus on the police misconduct that's happening around these ordinances being used as the pretext to harass musicians and poor people, than to worry about, you know, whether this is... It's not that the ordinances are necessarily being made that much worse, though they are adding benches and they are adding this ridiculous three strikes and you're out thing locally. And that's not good. That's bad. What's really noticeable is that they're essentially ratifying police behavior downtown. If you like what you see downtown, and some people do. I talked to Marilyn of Alfrescos, who previously was an opponent of the downtown ordinances. She has a kiosk in front of New Leaf. Now she's a supporter of them because she's, as a merchant, she feels that she's had to spend a lot of her time dealing with people who are smoking in the area or congregating in ways that, you know, offend her customers, take up space and so forth. And I've told her that you know, this is one of the costs of doing business because you have a lease on the space that really should be public in the sidewalk area. So, you know, it's a conflict that comes up. There's a real conflict of interest, but there's a better way of dealing with these kinds of conflicts than passing new laws and sending around police officers to dictate to one group of people what they should do and to uphold the monopolization and gentrification of space for the other group of people. Anyway, here's a little cop watching before I vanish into the distance. Actually, looks like there's maybe a phone call, and that may be what we do with the rest of the show. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hola. Robert, I'm sorry, what did you say Marilyn was talking about, that she is against singing? Is she for the ordinances, or is it in between somewhere?
Marilyn likes the idea that the police tell people who are disturbing her customers, either through, I don't know, inappropriately loud singing, smoking, maybe using the tables when there's no space for the customers.
Does she summon the police or just wishes
they well, come? I don't know. I mean, I think that what she does generally is she tries to go out and address these issues herself by asking the person, look, you know, I'm trying to run a business here. This is part of the area I've leased from the city to do my business. And also the law states you're not allowed to do this and this. Can you? And most of the time that's effective. But her concern is she's gotten to the point where she starts seeing what she regards as a pattern, and she wants to stop people from congregating in order to avoid these situations coming up, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. Do you still get friendly greetings from her?
Sometimes, oh, sure.
She just is pretty blank and...
Marilyn's sometimes a hard person for me to kind of judge, but she hasn't told me to leave her area. We have continued to talk. And so, I mean, and I like her, you know. I mean, I think we disagree on the downtown ordinances. I think she supports them and I don't. So, you know, there is that certain division between us. But
I guess it's when she's getting ready to work, leave at 6. She doesn't really care to talk to musicians.
It's possible. You know, Marilyn is, for those who don't know, is a woman who runs Alfresco's. And frankly, she's much better than the previous owner, Matisse Selman of Sushi Now, who was, you know, who actually resorted to collusion with the police, false arrests. And the other kiosk, former kiosk owner, what is now Cafe Campesino, used to be Alibaba's Cafe. And they had a very horrible owner in the sense that I liked him personally. It's strange. He was a very colorful Middle Eastern guy. But he was also very macho and aggressive and harsh towards musicians and homeless people who were in what he considered to be his area. So, you know, it's interesting. It's it is coming up in the next city council. It is going to be rammed through, I believe, without much discussion. It will be come up again 2 weeks later for a second reading. There was a meeting of the Downtown Commission. Yes, there was a scheduled meeting of the Downtown Commission today that was canceled. The Downtown Commission usually looks at the downtown ordinance laws that come up. But for some reason, the Downtown Commission, under the very reactionary Jerry Mandel, who I also have strong disagreements with, she's the chair, didn't hold any hearings on any of these laws. It came through this secret process. I contacted the city attorney, John Barisoni, to ask to see copies of these laws. I'm actually looking at draft copies of the laws, which I think have been modified since they were sent to me, because they say they've expanded the distance to 20 feet, making it a forbidden zone up to 20 feet, which means you have virtually no space at all to do anything. And I think that that's been restored to 14 feet. But the point is that neither the city attorney nor Mayor Matthews were willing to share these ordinances with the broader community. I only got them through a secret source today.
Don.
No, he's not. Don Lane, actually a council member, did come forward and said he knew something about the ordinances. He passed on a memo or two, which I posted on Indie Bay, but the actual text of the ordinances came out 2 weeks ago and has been secreted around by these merchant groups, and so that we have not, in the general community, been allowed to discuss and debate them. They're going to be rammed through and rubber-stamped, is my concern. And it's not that they're that big of a change in many respects, but they are ratifying the existing bad ordinances and the existing bad police practices, which are running musicians out of town, running food servers away, and harassing poor people generally downtown.
There hasn't been any allowance of public coming to a downtown ordinance meeting, a downtown association meeting, has there?
Well, Downtown Association hasn't announced its meeting. I mean, it does have regular meetings, but it didn't have any in December, I don't think. I think they took a vacation, and I don't know. They are having meetings in January. I'm waiting for Chip to respond to let me know when his meetings are. I think they're publicly posted, but the Downtown Association doesn't really discuss these things publicly so much. They go into closed session to talk about this kind of stuff. At least they did before under the former executive director, Keith Holtaway, when he was executive director. So,
all right. Got to go.
And so do I.
Right.
Take care of yourself there, musician.
Will do.
Bye-bye. And I think that really is going to be about it. We're going to have to forestall and postpone the Cop Watch interviews, but you'll be hearing more of them on Sunday, assuming that I make it into the studio. If not, you can always join Cop Watch, Santa Cruz Cop Watch. Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or come down Tuesday. This time we're going to be in front of O'Neill's, not in front of Borders, I think we've decided it's going to be, it's either 1 or 2 o'clock. I'll give you the exact time on Sunday. O'Neill's has been taking out, apparently has been colluding with the police in trying to harass Brent Adams, the drummer. You can read about this story on IndieBay.org. They've also gone after chalk art activist Whitney Wild 2 months ago. They seem to think the public sidewalk is theirs to determine who has the right to do what on, and they're using the police as their private security guards. And I think it may be time to start gathering information and encouraging the community to advise O'Neill's that they're a sports shop not high school principals and school monitors, and that we are adults and not six-year-olds, and that people, as adults, we can vote with our pocketbooks as well as, with our ballots every 4 years for the appropriately approved candidates. Anyway, that's it for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Here's a little bye-bye music from Young Frankenstein, and we will take it from there. And again, give a call between times to 423-HUFF, and I will get back to you. We can use your help. Thanks.
Penny for your thoughts.
You know, until now, my life has been nothing but a meaningless whirl of silly parties. But I always sensed that something was missing. Love. And I'm not talking about puppy love either. One-night stand love or cheap love. No. What I'm talking about is... Oh, what's the word I'm looking for? Ah, yes. Deep love. At last I found deep love. Been searching for deep love for all of my life. Long love, incredibly long love, a constant and strong love that rids me of strife. Firm love, a gentle but firm love, an unyielding firm love, for this my heart cries. Deep love, at last I found deep love, now I will keep love forever in the sun.
Again? Oh, you're incorrigible, aren't you, you old zipper neck? Well, all right. Seven always has been my lucky number. Come here, you great big hot monster! What is it? What's the matter? Is it that music? Oh, forget it. That's just some poor lonely fool blowing his French horn. Where are you going? You're walking out on me? Me? Oh, you men are all alike. 5 or 6 quick ones and you're off with the boys to boast and brag. Well, you'd better keep your mouth shut!
Oh, I think I love him.
Deep love!
Have any last words before we string you up, Dr. Frankenstein?
Just this.
Though my time on Earth is done, though I face this angry crowd, though I'm hated and despised, of one thing I can say I'm proud. This is truly mine. I'm a man who has no shame in shouting out his family name. I am a Frankenstein!
Frederick, I realize it's a rather shabby thing for a chap to do to his creator, but... I'm afraid that I've fallen madly in love with your fiancé.
And I with him.
Deep love. At last she's found deep love. Been searching for deep love for all of her life. Hard love, a diamond like hard love. You caught me off guard, love. Will you be my wife?
Doctor, creature, everyone, I have to leave. I got a blind date.
It's a miracle. It's a miracle. It's gone. My hump. It's gone.
No. It's in the middle.
Good evening. I am thinking of relocating to the Transylvania area, perhaps to purchase a castle like that one there on the hill.
Well, I'm sorry, sir, but that castle, it's not for sale. It belongs to me, and I'll be living in it from now on because I'm going to join the family business, learn the family trade, make another monster, make the world afraid. We can take a hayride when we're on our honeymoon.
Honeymoon!
We'll make the son of Frankenstein. The sequel's coming soon.
Darling, if you gave some monster your brilliant mind, what did he give you in return?
Woof!